welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. In today's lecture, we're going to finish up our discussion of surface temperatures and what determines it on a regional and global scale. We'll also address some applications of temperature data. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the second half of Chapter 3 from the Aaron's text. Last lecture, we started talking about what actually controls temperature. We finished that lecture with a discussion of differential heating of land and water, and we learned that land heats up and cools off faster than the ocean for a variety of reasons. Today, we're going to talk about some other controls on temperature, including ocean currents, altitude, geographic position and winds, and cloud cover and albedo. Let's start with ocean currents. Ocean currents are caused by wind and ultimately are due to the inequalities in solar radiation received by the equator and the poles. The interaction between the atmosphere and the ocean drives the subsurface movement of water, known as currents. This is one way in which energy passes from the atmosphere to the ocean via friction. The wind blowing on the water causes drag. This drag causes the water to move, creating our ocean currents. An example of how important ocean currents can be to regional temperatures is the effect of the Gulf Stream on the east coast of the US and Great Britain. Ocean currents moving poleward, for example, those coming from the warm tropical waters near the equator and moving towards the poles, bring energy with them. Warm water from the tropics travels up the eastern coast of the US via the Gulf Stream and provides an energy source to keep air temperatures near the coast warmer than they would otherwise be. After it moves past the US, it becomes the North Atlantic Drift and helps keep English and Irish weather mild as compared to similar latitude locations in Canada. This effect is opposite in the case of cold polar currents that head down towards the tropics, bringing cold temperatures to those regions that would otherwise be experienced if the water was coming from the equator. We see this effect on the California, Oregon, and Washington coasts due to the cold south flowing California current. Let's move on to altitude. We know the temperature decreases with height in the troposphere, so we have experienced these colder temperatures with heights before in this class. Atmospheric pressure and density decrease as well, and because of this, the atmosphere absorbs and reflects less radiation. Also, keep in mind that the colder temperatures encourage the remaining snow to stay put. So if we have cold temperatures, we're likely to have snow and ice, and because snow and ice are reflective, we're also going to reflect some of that light back to space, keeping temperatures cool. Our next control of temperature is geographic position. Geographic position is important for many locations, but is quite important for Oahu and the other Hawaiian islands. Geographic position with respect to wind direction can play a huge role in determining local temperature and weather. The leeward side of a location is where the prevailing winds are blowing towards the ocean. In this case, you would experience more variable surface temperatures because the wind must pass over land first and will likely no longer have the direct ocean influence. The windward side of a location, like Oahu, is where the prevailing winds blow from the ocean to the shore. In this case, the air temperature would be modified by the ocean, so the air temperature will be less variable, and you'll have milder winters and cooler summers. If we think of the continental US, the west coast would be considered the windward coast, where wind typically blows from out over the Pacific Ocean towards land. The opposite would be the east coast, which would have more variable temperatures due to the air having recently traveled over the continental landmass. Finally, let's talk about cloud cover and albedo. We've already talked about how clouds cool the surface during the day because they have a high albedo. This means we would experience a lower maximum temperature than if clouds were not present. Remember from last week's lecture, clouds warm the surface at night because they trap long-wave radiation, resulting in a higher minimum temperature if the clouds were not there. If we compare a 24-hour period with clouds and a 24-hour period without clouds, we can see an interesting pattern. The clear day will have a lower minimum just before dawn than the cloudy day, and the daytime maximum temperature will be much higher than in the cloudy case. That summarizes our controls on temperature, and they included differential land and heating, ocean currents, altitude, geographic position, and cloud cover and albedo. Now that we have a good handle on the different drivers for temperature on a regional scale, let's address global patterns. We can look at the distribution of world temperatures by mapping temperature on a global map for different months or seasons. If we compare a northern hemisphere winter month like January with a northern hemisphere summer month like July, we can see some interesting patterns. we can clearly observe the latitudinal shifting due to the seasonal migration of the Sun from the Tropic of Cancer during the Northern Hemisphere summer solstice to the Tropic of Capricorn in the Southern Hemisphere during the Northern Hemisphere winter solstice. We can also observe so-called hot spots of differential heating due to the differences in surface characteristics. We see hottest points over land and not over the ocean. It is clear, though, that latitude is the primary driver in determining temperature due to changes in sun angle. You will also note that the hottest and coldest places are over land. We can see some interesting impacts of ocean currents as well, since warm ocean currents push warm water towards the poles, warming the air along the way. That way we see warm temperature in the northern oceans where there otherwise would be colder air due to the latitude. Equatorial bound currents help cool the air as well. Comparing the same January and July global temperature maps, you would also notice that the equatorial temperatures do not fluctuate significantly between the two. This is primarily due to the equatorial region receiving a constant amount of solar radiation throughout the year, and thus has little seasonality. The middle and higher latitudes have much stronger seasonal signals. That finishes up our discussion of drivers of temperature. Let's move on to applications of temperature data. We're going to talk about heating degree days, cooling degree days, growing degree days, and ways temperature determines comfort, like wind chill and the heat index. A heating degree day is essentially when you'd need to turn the heat on. It was developed by engineers in the early 20th century as a way to evaluate energy demand. They decided that you don't need heat if it is 65 degrees Fahrenheit or warmer. Any degree below 65 degrees Fahrenheit counts as a heating degree day. For example, if it is 50 degrees Fahrenheit outside, you would have accumulated 15 heating degree days for that calendar day. You calculate this number by subtracting 50 from 65. You do this calculation for each day of the year or season and sum them up. This gives you an idea of how many days you needed the heat and how much heat you needed, since the colder it is, the more energy you would need to raise the temperature to a comfortable and acceptable level. A cooling degree day is when you'd need to turn the AC on. Cooling degree days are essentially the opposite of a heating degree day. It's a way to evaluate the energy demand for cooling a building. If it's above 65, you need to turn the AC on. In this case, any degree above 65 counts as a cooling degree day. For example, if it's 85 degrees Fahrenheit outside, you'll have accumulated 20 cooling degree days for that calendar day. You calculate this number by subtracting 65 from 85, and we use daily mean temperatures as our comparison to 65. As with heating degree days, you total them up for a year or season to determine how much energy you need to cool your buildings in a specific location. A growing degree day is when a certain plant can grow. These are used by farmers to determine the approximate date to harvest crops. The amount of growing degree days needed is crop specific. The number of growing degree days for a crop on any day is the difference between the daily mean temperature and the base temperature of that crop. Let's look at a couple of quick examples. If sweet corn had a base temperature of 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which isn't necessarily true, it's just used to illustrate the calculation method, and peas have a base temperature of 40 degrees Fahrenheit, what would the growing degree days be if the mean daily temperature was 75 degrees Fahrenheit? For sweet corn, we would calculate this by taking 75 minus 50, or the mean daily temperature minus the sweet corn's base temperature. This would give us 25 growing degree days for our corn. For our peas, we would follow the same process and take 75 minus 40 and get 35 growing degree days. Thus, if 2,000 growing degree days are needed to mature sweet corn, you would just keep track of when you hit 2,000 growing degree days and then harvest your crop. Let's move on to temperature and how it relates to human comfort. How we perceive temperature matters to us as humans. It is affected by relative humidity, wind, and sunshine. When it is warm outside, we can use the heat index, which allows for the effect of high relative humidities. When it's humid, evaporation for our skin doesn't work as well and we feel hotter. And so our bodies don't cool off as quickly and can be uncomfortable, and actually can be dangerous for small children and older adults. When it's cold outside, we use the concept of wind chill. The wind makes it feel colder than it actually is because it's removing heat from our skin faster than if the air was still. The National Weather Service has a wind chill chart, and it allows you to look up your current thermometer temperature and wind speed and see what the temperature would feel like outside. For example, if it's 25 degrees Fahrenheit outside with a wind speed of 15 miles per hour, it would actually feel like it's 13 degrees Fahrenheit. If you increase the wind speed to, say, 45 miles per hour, the temperature would feel like 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So you can see that temperature and wind make a huge difference and can actually become quite dangerous if temperatures get well below freezing. You can experience frostbite. Our final topic today will be a discussion of how we create isotherm maps and temperature maps. We use something called an isotherm to show the distribution of temperature over large areas. There are lines that connect points on a map that have the same temperature. We use isotherms because it makes it easier to read and to analyze weather maps. By looking at patterns of temperature, you can determine weather conditions in the next few days. There are many examples online for you to look at and use for your own practice. That finishes up our lecture on temperature, the main factors determining regional and global temperatures, and applications of temperature data. Join us next time for a discussion on water in the atmosphere. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!